then we would realize so-called China and the U.S. war on economics, or how to call trading war, which is really it's an illusion. It's not really possible because basically China has bought so much economic
benefit.
Not only benefit, it's very much integrated with U.S. economy. You know, the treasury and the bank, all those things are Chinese investment in there. So you cannot even really say we can separate.
Ai Weiwei, world-renowned Chinese artist and activist, his documentary Vivos premiered here at the Sundance Film Festival. To see our previous interview on his first documentary, go to democracynow.org. From Park City TV in Utah,
only to dream our best life, but that we have the freedom to live it.
Hey, Taylor.
Hi.
This is a demand for an end to judgment.
I'm Rita Moreno. Watching a sunset, reading a book, or seeing the faces of loved ones are some of life's most wonderful pleasures. Pleasures that may be lost forever to more than 6 million Americans who are losing their vision to macular degeneration, but there's hope. For the latest information on treatments and the search for cures, call the Foundation Fighting Blindness at 1-800-394-8280. That's 1-800-394-8280.
Experts say it's easy to give a boost to the safety of children ages 4 to 8 when riding in a car. Studies show these older children weighing approximately 40 to 80 pounds are rarely restrained properly when riding in a car. According to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, less than 10% of children who should be in booster seats are actually belted in properly. That's significant because traffic crashes are the number one cause of death for children. Parents often put their kids in seat belts that don't fit properly and safely. A booster seat lifts an older child up to a height which corrects the problem. To help combat this alarming trend, the National Automobile Dealers Association has joined in a national campaign to raise public awareness of the importance of booster seat use. For more information on the proper use of booster seats, visit www.nhtsa.gov and click on Child Passenger Safety.
This is Meryl Streep. There's so much in life we can't control. But here's something we can: colorectal cancer. It's the second leading cancer killer in the U.S., but it is almost entirely preventable. Screening finds polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. If you're over 50, get screened for colorectal cancer. Screening saves lives. It could really save your life. For more information, call 1-800-CDC-INFO.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Well, thanks there, Meryl. Yeah, that was some Democracy Now!, right? Ai Weiwei talking about his new documentary and an amazing artist and an amazing man. And living in an amazing place, doing amazing things, I got to tell you. It's a lot of amazing. Yeah, so you know it's now 6 p.m. on WUSB Stony Brook. My name is Finn. And you know, if it's 6 p.m. on a Tuesday night, that can only mean one thing. It's time for Off the Wall.
Well, we're back. This is Off the Wall. I'm Kyle, and I'm being driven by Emmanuel.
Being driven crazy, yes. You know, this is the first time I think you've ever intro'd the show like that.
Wow, that's a new thing. Okay, well, I figured that's basically where we would start, and I've been around a while, so I kind of just naturally went to that.
Well, yes, but to get back to the initial point you made, you are being driven. In fact, we're driving in a car. I'm driving. You're the navigator and microphone holder right now.
And disc jockey.
Yeah, I guess that too. But we are in Quebec, driving east. Before we get into what we're doing right now and what we plan on doing, probably we should catch up to what we did and where we left off last week. Last week, we had just arrived in Montreal after taking a train up. And if you recall, I had just lost my credit card, or I just discovered that I lost my credit card, the one that I use to pay for things like the rental car. It covers the rental car, in fact. I could wrap this thing around a tree right now. I'm not going to do it, but I could, and it would be covered because of the credit card I have. Other credit cards don't do that. So I was very upset that I lost that credit card on the train because of the new pants I bought where things fall out of the pockets. So, needless to say, it was a stressful couple of days because I contacted both Via Rail and Amtrak. The train is Amtrak, and it's run by Via Rail over the border, which is a Canadian train system. I contacted both of the Lost and Founds, and they were looking for it, and there was no luck. And I had to reach a stage at some point where I had to abandon the search, declare it not a search mission anymore, but rather a recovery mission.
Wow, that sounds so serious and grave. But they were pretty friendly about it, and as I recall, they had some paperwork. You filled out a couple forms, I think, for each transport authority. So there was definitely an all-point search for this particular card. But the sort of secondary plan then became getting a replacement.
Yeah, because at some point I had to just come to terms with the fact that they weren't going to find this thing, and they certainly weren't going to find this thing in time for me to use it to actually pick up the car. So what I had to do at that point was declare it lost, and in so doing, that means my number has to change, which is a hassle in and of itself, because then you have to tell the credit card company, you have to actually tell everybody that you have a monthly arrangement with that bills to that credit card, that the number has changed. A lot of hassle to go through that, but you know, once you make that decision, that's where you are. So I did that. And then I asked, well, I'm in Quebec. How long could it take for me to get a replacement card? Fully expecting the answer to be, you know, a week, 2 weeks, making it completely useless. But they actually said, we can try and get this to you in a couple of days. I gave them the address that we were staying at in Quebec City, because we're moving on from Montreal. And they said they'd try to get it to us by the weekend. And literally, when we got to Quebec City, we got to the place we were staying, not 20 minutes after we arrived, there was a UPS package for us. They did it in one day. I cannot believe how amazing this credit card company was. I don't want to mention who they are on the air because that would be tantamount to advertising. But if I was going to advertise for anybody, it would be them. Because, wow, they just really broke all records. They got me this card, and it's a card that they are going to cover my rental car with. So there was no incentive for them to do this because it's just more of an expense for them in case something does happen to the car. But I was very happy, very impressed. Got a new credit card now, which I have not lost yet, and currently driving the car completely covered.
That really is outstanding, really amazing, mind-blowing. I can't even think of all the different words. Just to think of the technical structure, it's almost like they had a credit card printing machine on a UPS truck. It was that fast. I don't even know how that would even happen. It's third parties, or some manufacturer, and they just package it, spit it out of the machine just as soon as you tell them to replace it. How does that even happen? It was crazy. That was impressive stuff, but saved our rears.
You can say butt on the air.
Saved our behinds. And is now allowing us to make this journey and make the trip. Well, that's another one of those credit unions. We're learning all about cards and prepaid cards and trying to get SIM cards and plans and all these different things, and we were exploring the banking system.
Yeah, well, you had to use a credit union in order to get money out yesterday, but we'll get into why you had to get money out yesterday, because there's a whole big story involved in that as well. But just to say what we did in Montreal, we really got accustomed to that city pretty quickly, got our 3-day Metro Pass, and just went all over the place, visited McGill University, talked to a class there for a while, and just met a lot of really cool people. I love that city. It was really cold when we arrived. It just snowed, apparently. It got less cold when we were there, but we were prepared for that. I had to even stop wearing my fur hat because it wasn't cold enough for it. But it was just really a neat place to hang out, and very welcoming and inviting. And we went to a non-commercial radio station. We visited them. A lot of similarities to WUSB, except that they're in the middle of a city. But we spent a lot of time walking around and just becoming natives of that place before we got into this car and started. We got onto a train. I'm sorry, I missed a step. We got onto a train and took a 3-hour train ride to Quebec City.
Sure. Yeah, that was more of like an intercity regional ride on VIA, which we've taken before, and they maintain all of those routes. But surely, yeah, Montreal was really fascinating. We did a lot of exploration of their underground or metro, subway, whatever you want to refer to it as. They call it the Metropolitan or Metro, and they had some new rolling cars or subway cars, and those were very nice, very new and interesting. And we realized Montreal's subway is a bit sparse for the terrain. That was our conclusion. You observed that when you looked at the topography in relation to those lines.
Well, it was more than just that. It was basically, what was the phrase you came up with? Montreal, overly complicated.
Unnecessarily
complicated, and not what you would expect. And the reason we say that is because every time we looked for something, it got ridiculously complicated finding it. For instance, the Metro. Okay, I mentioned the first time when I found out I lost my credit card, finding the Metro station where I could buy a card, a pass. I had to go through all these corridors, down escalators, across streets, underground, of course. But it's like that with almost everything you do. There aren't enough signs. If you know where something is, it's great. If you don't know where it is, you're going to be wandering around looking puzzled for quite some time. And don't ask people for help, because they'll tell you something that won't exactly line up. And you'll find yourself overshooting by a mile before you realize you've gone the wrong way. If they just would hire somebody to put up more Metro signs and more street signs, it would be fine and dandy. You know, we'd really be able to find our way around the city. Once, however, we did start realizing where things were, then we became like Montreal natives, and we were able to find things pretty quickly.
Absolutely. It increased the more we were familiar, the more we made some stops. And those walks, when you realize, okay, this is actually going to be 10 extra minutes to make this walk, you really start to strategize. Is that really a closer station? Or I don't like that enormous hill in front of that station before I got to go this way. And you tend to have a preference. But yeah, it's true also that the native folks and tourists are kind of on different ends of the spectrum. And we kind of, being oddballs, are in the middle there with like an interest in using the public transport and going where the locals are going. But we're not yet quite as familiar as someone who's there all the time and knows exactly how long it takes to get here or go there. So we still need signage and directions, but we're using unusual things to the point where we're not taken everywhere on a tour bus. And so that's always interesting, because we're kind of a small subset, I guess, of visitors to the city in that regard.
So anyway, after that, we got on that train, made our way to Quebec City. Which is so awesome. It really is like going to Europe. And when you think about it, to get to Canada by train, not driving, imagine going to the Stony Brook train station, right, and getting on a train and going to New York City, okay, paying your fare, and then coming back, off peak, not during peak. Okay, so you've made a round trip. Do that one more time. Guess what? You've spent almost as much as it costs to go to Canada by train. About another $10, I think, is all it costs. And then you're in a foreign country. And we were discussing this yesterday, that this is next door to New York, a French-speaking country, Quebec, part of Canada, obviously. But it's so culturally different and refreshing, and it's so accessible, if only we took advantage more. Montreal is amazing. Quebec is really, really a foreign city. And we were spending a lot of time walking around last night. It started to snow. It was so amazing, so incredible, so magical. We spent about 3 days in that city, and very hilly. We walked around quite a bit, went to both the touristy part and the non-touristy part. And I got to say, it's just a magical experience no matter where you go in this city.
Surely is, yes. The discussions we had with friends and people around were always so interesting. Practicing French, I took a lot of French, so it's always a good reminder when I come to Quebec and the French-speaking parts of Canada that I'm actually a little bit more prepared than I really appreciate when I'm out of the area. But when I come back, I always get thrust back into it, and that speaking just comes back to you. Really as a courtesy, but it's so appreciated. It's truly another nation, and French speaking. It's a distinct Canadian French or Quebec variant of it.
500 meters, turn right.
I think we veered off the path we're supposed to go on.
Oh dear. Well, yeah, I think we were engrossed in conversation and weren't paying mind to the navigation computer.
This is what happens. You get so captivated by describing Quebec that you forget where you are if you're somewhere else, and you just lose track.
It's amazing, though. It just, all I'm saying is, you're not just in a
turn right on Rue Bellerive. Turn right on Rue Saint-Étienne.
Another language, another culture, another country, as you said, but a bilingual one that speaks both, that is happy to hear you try, or at least to hear you admit that you cannot speak the native language.
Can I just say, there's a phone booth in front of us. There's phone booths everywhere in this country. It's amazing. They don't get rid of them.
Yeah, you can't. No, not not when they work well. It's it's important. So, yeah, no, the language is one thing, the culture is another, the town itself is a little bit more walkable, I'd say. I think people there would admit the same, that just you don't need to rely on buses or make that 15-minute walk everywhere. I kept noticing that when people would give us just directions, even if they were wrong, everything was always 15 minutes one way or the other. And it turned out to be a half hour or 40 minutes, because invariably we'd go the wrong way and get lost. And Quebec was a little bit more navigable in that regard.
Yeah, like we're doing now, getting lost in a car, where we just made one overshooting of the road we're supposed to be on, and I think I have to turn down five. What, and now I'm going the wrong way again? I followed the directions this time. So now it wants me to do something
turn
else.
Turn right on Rue Saint-Étienne.
Okay, this is really a little frustrating here, because I just did this.
I think you were supposed to go across the bridge, and it didn't tell us.
Well, one of us is the navigator, and one of us is the driver.
At this point, I think I'm the engineer. I'm holding a microphone and making sure that the audio doesn't cut out and that our listeners are happy. And I think, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I think our listeners are a priority at this point. I have them in my hand. I have all of them right here. I'm holding them.
Is that another payphone, or is that the same one?
That's the very same one. And
we just made a big loop.
We did. We made a loop. And there's a central office right next to that one. So this is the epicenter of whatever town this is. Seems to be on a lake.
Okay, so it looks like I'm getting back to the point where we went off the road somehow. So anyway, we basically spent time in Quebec, as Kyle said. And when we say it's a walkable city, it is walkable, but it's very hilly. So you get used to it, though. You get used to it extremely quickly, and what seemed like an impossible climb becomes easy.
It's 500 meters. Turn right on Boulevard Malcolm Fraser.
So we spent a few days there, and then we got our car and started heading east. And I guess now is the time to tell people what we're actually doing.
Okay, and you're intimating, you're motioning to me as though I have the whole plan. What are we doing? I have no idea where I am. I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, I don't either, and if I don't make the right turn here, we're going to go through all that again.
Okay, no, make the turn, make the turn.
Boulevard Malcolm Fraser.
Manuel is signaling as he should and waiting for the traffic signal. This bridge crosses what I believe is a lake, maybe the narrow end of a lake. So it's a small body of water. And this town we're in is sort of set against this body of water. So we're going to cross and continue on 138. And where that gets us, well, after several hundred more kilometers, is this interesting town called Sept-Îles. And that translates to Seven Islands, I believe, from French to English. So Sept-Îles, though probably a fascinating place, is really just a launching point for us on a different train. Not VIA, not Amtrak getting up there, not the Metro or Montreal subway. No. This is a real train.
Continue straight for 3 hours and 55 minutes to route 138.
A train that is a lifeline.
You heard her say that. Almost 4 hours without any more turns, if we're lucky. This is the weirdest train in North America. Maybe you could tell the folks why?
Okay, well, I have some of the details. Basically, it is a 300 or 400-mile route that goes north-south and connects Sept-Îles to a town called Schefferville. And something that's really interesting about this particular train line is that it was purchased from a mining or mineral interest, I believe Canadian government even, or CN, the state rail entity here. They sold it to an indigenous community, and it is completely owned, operated, and utilized by the communities along and at the opposite end of this route.
They sold it literally for $1 to the First Nations, which is quite a bargain. I'm not sure if it's 300 or 400 miles, kilometers, or even that much.
It's miles.
Is it really that much on the train?
I'm pretty sure the route was, it's definitely more than 200. We'll get the exact figure. I thought when I was researching, saw 300 miles, but the type of measurement could be wrong. I'm not exactly sure.
Well, one thing that is definite, the train ride is 13 hours long.
That sounds like a lot of miles. And it is the only way to get there. They are 150 miles, I believe. That is Schefferville, the end point of this rail route. 150 miles from a highway or a main road. And that's more rugged terrain, or maybe, how should we say, not highways, two-lane roads, or gravel even, if you can access it at all. And that really gets complicated in the winter.
And maybe I didn't mention this to you, but this is a good time to bring this up. Between Sept-Îles and Schefferville, from the beginning point of the 13-hour train ride and the end point, there is not one single town. It's all wilderness or little posts where people get out. The hunters get out, and they meet people with skidoos, snowmobiles, that will take them into the forest where they go hunting. There is one stop where you can get a taxi or a lift to Labrador City about 45 minutes away. The train used to split and used to go to Labrador City, but it does not do that anymore. So if you want to go there, which we do, but we're not going to do on this trip, you have to arrange for a ride at that particular stop. But between Sept-Îles and Schefferville, just a lot of scenery and hopefully a lot of wildlife.
It's true. Yeah, this is something I'm really looking forward to, and It's essentially, yeah, as you said, some mechanism for getting equipment on. Very often people flag it down, I heard. They can somehow signal to the train to stop, or people on the train would arrange and let people know that their pickup is coming up. Wow, look at that. There's an enormous body of water out there as we go up 138 here.
I understand from some of our friends in Quebec that we will be going into a fjord and basically taking a ferry across a body of water, free ferry, that connects this road to the other side. And I just saw a sign warning cars not to drive too fast down the hill or mountain. And they told us this horrible story that happened apparently here, where this couple were driving a vehicle of some sort, and they didn't stop. They basically, either their brakes failed or they were trying to make the boat stupidly. And it actually was like a cartoon scene where they flew off the dock and they actually landed on the boat, which was already had already left. They didn't survive. So that's on cartoons you do. In real life, you don't. We'll be careful.
Yeah, we are not going to make that kind of impression or landing. When we see the ferry, we'll calmly approach it and make sure it's still connected to the dock as we board.
So, as far as this train goes, yeah, it's a weird-ass train run by First Nations, not connected to any other rail line. But to get a ticket on this thing, we've been trying. We called them. And it's they don't speak English, they speak French, and maybe some Innu or Cree language that the native people speak. We could not make ourselves understood. I was exchanging emails via Google Translate with them while I was on the train right before I lost my credit card, because I had it in my pocket so I could pay them. I never got to the point where I could pay for a ticket. So the only thing we can do is pay with cash, which is why Kyle got all the cash out yesterday at the credit union. And so what we're hoping is that the train leaves at 7 in the morning. We had a friend of ours who speaks French. Obviously, anybody who lives here speaks French. Called them. And even then, it was hard to understand because of their particular accent. But we were able to at least get the understanding that the train leaves at 7 in the morning. You need to be there about an hour and a half before, for some reason, because it gets crowded or busy or something. And so we have to work out things like, okay, where do we put our car? And when we get to Schefferville, assuming we get on the train, how do we get to where we're staying, which is 2 kilometers away? And last I checked, it was minus 30 Celsius in Schefferville. Are we going to walk that? Or is there a taxi? Is there some way of getting there? So little things like that, that's what we still have to work out. But right now the big challenge is making sure that we are at the train station at about 5:30 in the morning to make sure that we get on this train in the first place and pay them in cash and make ourselves understood one way or another.
Sure, yeah. Is it a round-trip ticket? That's my concern. Somehow we'll get 2 tickets and it won't be round-trip. I know that's silly, but that's my obvious sensitivity to what could go wrong. I know it'll be that'll be fine, and some other detail will complicate things, or language barrier is huge. I said I was enjoying speaking French, but I can't say I'm relying on speaking French. It's always some detail. Or do we pack enough to survive the train? You know, is it something that we would definitely want to bring our own provisions and water and stuff, or should we just expect to buy? There's a snack bar on the train apparently, so are snacks really the ideal way to go from the train? I mean, just details, how to make it.
And the other thing is, we have to take the train back, and it leaves at almost the same time the next morning from Schefferville. So we barely have enough time to find a place to crash in Schefferville. Well, we already have a place to sleep, but to get there before we have to wake up again and get right back to the train station. Otherwise, we're stuck in Schefferville for the week. And, you know, it sounds like a interesting place. It's got 200 people who live there. It's really cold, covered with snow. I'm not sure it's going to be that interesting where we want to be there for a week. And also it's expensive as hell to stay there and to do anything. I want to see some prices of just basic items. So we're going to have to be really on our toes to make sure we get there and we get back. And then we have to drive 8 hours back to Quebec.
Indeed, yeah, and that's a good point. It's a scouting mission. It's just to get those kinds of details. What are prices? What kinds of service, if there is cell service, if we are finding the only accommodations in town. And yeah, by the time we really explore, maybe take a couple pictures just for our own personal memory, we'll barely have enough time to sort of take a shower and lay our heads down before we're anxious and ready to get on that train. The only other circumstance is there could be a delay with a train. And in fact, you said a train was turned back at one point.
Yeah, there was a train that was turned back from Schefferville because of, I don't know why, maybe snow, maybe it was a caribou herd or something. And that's not a joke. That really happens. But I'm stuck behind a truck right now going up a mountain. We want to go and see if we make the train to Schefferville. So the next thing you hear will be info on the train, hopefully, or maybe watching the train as it goes away because we couldn't get on it. Let's find out.
We'll speak with you then.
Well, as it turned out, we made it to the train. In fact, we're on the train right now. The train to Schefferville, we got up at the crack of dawn. It really was very stressful because we got there late at night, got to sit there late at night, didn't get very much sleep at all. We weren't sure if we were going to be able to even get a ticket because we had to show up an hour and a half before the train left, pay in cash, and talk to people in a language we didn't understand, possibly two languages we didn't understand. But Carl, you did kind of the bulk of the work here at the station. Can you describe the scene there?
Well, the night before we checked it out, so we knew where it was. We got there early the next day, and basically about two dozen people were lining up with all kinds of bags and boxes and things, getting ready to go on their journey. And we just brought our things in after we parked and sort of scoped out the line and made sure not to cut in front of anyone.
Well, that's also, you touched on a point that I just remembered now. We parked. Yeah, we're not sure we parked legally. Well, we parked by a sign that in French said, don't park here Saturday and Sunday. Samedi and dimanche. If I remember my French correctly, that means Saturday and Sunday. And we parked there on a Monday and hoped to get the car back on a Tuesday. So we should be okay, but it's kind of a weird sign. Why? It's a parking lot. Why would you not let people park there just on Saturday and Sunday? And since the train, I don't know. There is a train that comes back, I think, over the weekend, so I'm not sure why there'd be that restriction. But I think, you know, this is the kind of uncertainty that we've been facing throughout this whole trip, is are we doing this right? We're not sure. It doesn't make any sense, but let's try and follow the rules.
Yeah, I was having really a lot of anxiety, actually, trying to get to sleep, trying to make sure we woke up early, just completely sort of at wit's end because there was so much uncertainty and really kind of uncertain I would even be able to pull off what we did. And speaking of parking, I did notice they even had long-term parking, which was something I knew when we visited the night before. And saw those spots, but we ended up using the spots that just had those weekend restrictions.
I'm pretty sure one day is not considered long term, so I didn't feel right doing that because it's probably some kind of penalty for getting your car back too soon if you park in long term.
Yeah, we figured we might as well leave those available for people who are really seriously going to come up for a week or two or longer and needed those spaces. So suffice to say, we were in line inside, making sure not to cut in front of anyone, and people were loading up their bags.
At 5:30 in the morning, it's dark outside, it's cold, and we have no idea what's going on. We just walk into this room. It's crowded with people, bunch of kids with hockey sticks, and everybody has huge boxes and bags filled with things that they're bringing back up to Schefferville or other parts that they were traveling to.
A lot of recognizable things, too, like paper towels and things you might get at a big box store, which understandably is probably just a wise choice if you're down anyway in Septil. to make those purchases and just add it to whatever belongings you're bringing back from your trip. So anyway, we kind of got a feel for the place, just looked around, looked a little, probably a little helpless, maybe a lot helpless, but we definitely made our presence known, shuffling our bags around, trying to just figure out where to stand. And I ventured up and talked to the person at the ticket counter, and she immediately redressed me and said she needed 1 minute. So I was like, okay, that was an initial failure, but at least we're making progress.
What language did she tell you that in?
I am not entirely sure, to be honest. I think French, maybe. She said un moment, and gave me, you know, the universal one minute finger sign. Not the one, not the middle one, the index. Anyway, so I realized, okay, this isn't a good start, but it's at least we're talking, and she's aware of me. So then I went back reassembled my things, double-checked, made sure I was ready, and periodically peered around the corner. And then, actually, I wasn't expecting it, but at one point she directed me to come up. So I went up, and I spoke in my sort of decent French, basically, je voudrais acheter deux billets pour... Shefferfield.
Wow, you said that beautifully.
Oui, I would like to buy 2 tickets for Shefferfield. And then she said something, and I was going to start showing her dates. Then she said something to me that had nothing to do with dates, so that immediately threw me off. And I think you had typed it up on a phone so that I could just show her. It was a total, that wasn't it. She was asking me for ID.
Yeah, we're so disorganized that we don't even have a way of writing something down on a piece of paper. We don't have a piece of paper, we don't have a pen. So the only thing I could think of was typing an SMS message and sending it to you. That said, I couldn't even figure out how to get a clipboard thing open on my phone. This is the day we're going from Sept-Îles to Shefferville. This is the day we're going from Shefferville to Sept-Îles. 2 people, please.
And, it was helpful just to have that, at least if I couldn't communicate just through broken French and English.
It works in Europe.
Yeah, exactly. Just in case the mashed up French and English didn't work, I did have that. And it gave me a little bit more confidence because I could point to the dates. And as it turns out, once I went back and asked you to just quickly give me a form of ID, and then I brought mine, presented it to her, and she commenced writing it down. She had a little clipboard. Very modern, as opposed to some of the tickets. I know some of the people in line behind me had tickets. We don't have them at this point. Remember, we're unable to find it on the internet, unable to contact the office. So I was expecting to pay, and I was trying then, once she had the ID, to move the conversation towards me needing round-trip tickets. But that's when a person in line, a very nice woman, told me that you can't get round-trip tickets, or basically expressed what I was trying to ask to her, and they both sort of communicated to me that, no, that's not what you do. You buy them up in Shefferfield for the return.
Shefferville.
I'm sorry, Shefferville. I keep trying. My brain keeps trying to say Sheffield. It's not England. It's not anywhere close to England. It's not Sheffield. It's Shefferville.
Yeah, Shefferville is not even in the Premier League. But here's the thing. I don't know if you remember in the last segment that we actually taped yesterday, you expressed a fear that you were only going to get a one-way ticket. And now that is exactly what happened. Your fear has been realized. You don't seem to be panicking from this particular realization of your premonition. But keep in mind, we are in it now. We are heading up to Shefferville, a town that is not connected to the rest of the world by road. There's only this one train that goes up there every now and then. And we only have a one-way ticket. And by the way, speaking of tickets, we still don't have a ticket for this ride because we aren't getting one. It doesn't work that way. The people who get tickets are people who regularly do this. If you are native and live in one of the communities, you get a reduced price. Or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe that's the regular price. We get an increased price because we're not from around here. But basically, we just got approved to get on the train, I guess, right?
Pretty much. That was it. She wrote us down, had our IDs entered, and then the interesting part is the total was presented to me in a form you might find familiar, a very large calculator. Some digits were entered, and the calculator was shown to me, and it amounted to just under 200 was what we were sort of expecting per leg there and back.
In China, what you're supposed to do is laugh and walk away. Then they chase after you with the calculator, and they ask you to enter in a number yourself. Then you enter in a number, and they scoff, and they walk away, and then you go back to them. But I guess that's not how it works here.
No, I took that. I found that just under the price I was anticipating for one way was just fine with me. So I was happy with that price. I gave her the appropriate amount in cash, and she issued me some change. And at that point, I asked the person that was helping me if I needed a receipt or if there was a ticket or something, and she corresponded or otherwise knew that, no, you don't need to do that. I think she did ask for me if there was any kind of ticket or receipt, and I basically got the denied and no, that isn't a problem, and just basically the response of like you're all done here, and that was fine. I basically began to walk away, and there was a ton of people at that point, so I was kind of stuck for a minute there, and I was starting to make my way back, and as soon as I kind of made my way past a couple people, she and this other woman got my attention and said, no, wait, no, and pulled me back over there, and I said, oh, okay, yeah, no, sure, what is the problem? And she said, there's actually, you have to pay me $10, so you owe me $20, which I knew what that meant, but it just sounded funny. And then I thought about it for a second, and I actually, on their little ticket window that I had been basically standing on the side of, I was basically halfway between the behind the counter and front of the counter. I wasn't standing at their little plexiglass window, but on that window there was a sign that said $10, and so I figured there was some sort of fee if you're, I don't know what it was about, I don't know what it was for, maybe if your baggage was a certain size, I don't know what it was. At that point I didn't care, I was like, you know what, here's the 20 that you need, and I'm all set, and that's when I returned and basically got in line.
Yeah, that, I mean, I saw the sign too, and it just basically said, pay an extra $10. No real reason for doing it, but it's there, there's a sign, they tell you to do it, I guess we have to do it, here's another $20. Meanwhile, I was just standing by our bags, and I was reading confusing signs that said, passengers are only allowed one carry-on bag, and you have to check the rest. Now, keep in mind, this train has something like 6 freight cars in the front. There's a cafe car, and then there's about 6 passenger cars in the back. It's very unique. So I wasn't sure if we were going to be able to take. We have 3.5 bags because you have a little tote bag. I wasn't sure if that was going to be an issue. Turns out it wasn't an issue, which is great. But there was another sign that said people with tickets stand over here. People stand by, and it's like stand by on a train, really. And the time that they gave, they said stand by from 7:30 to 7:45. Well, the train leaves at 7, so either that's a joke or it's an outdated sign or somebody's just not paying attention. In any event, none of that really mattered in the end because we just got waved through with everybody else, and before we knew it, we were on the train.
Yeah, exactly. And by the time I was all set with the second payment and queuing up to actually board the train, I was pretty convinced. I mean, seeing hockey sticks and all the things people were bringing, none of which really, I mean, we had anything close to, and did not need to check anything either. So when I kind of evaluated that and that I had paid extra fees and all that, the last thing I was going to do is have an extended conversation about my small shopping bag of like a book and a flask of water. I mean, it just seemed like that would be overbearing, and that's not the kind of scrutiny they were submitting people to. And the last thing basically was when we were in line, she just looked at us and said, ah, yes, un, deux. And we were 1 and 2, and she said, go ahead.
And that was music to my ears, knowing that we were approved and we got on the train and we set off maybe about 15 minutes late, but we started making slow and steady progress. It was slow at the first part and then sped up a little bit. As you can hear, a lot of difficulties, a lot of challenges, a lot of confusion, and it's not over yet because we are arriving in Schefferville this evening. Again, not spending very much time, just basically enough to get to where we're staying overnight. And then getting back to the train station and returning. And the reason we're doing it that bizarre way is because the train only runs twice a week. Sometimes it only runs once a week. And if we didn't do that, we'd have to stay there for, I think, 3 or 4 days. And we just can't justify doing that. And I don't know if there's enough for us to do in that place. And it's fiercely expensive. So this is the best solution, at least for this trip.
Well, yeah, and what I've been telling people is that we're trying to familiarize ourselves, and I think that's really quite honest. I mean, if we knew more people, if we knew more of what kind of activities there are, and the best way for us to actually persist up in Schefferville for a while, then it might be more of a workable way to do it. But at this point, I think it is probably better for us to just check it out, get familiar with how the train works, and maybe consider coming back in a different part of the year or at another point in time.
But I mentioned we still have some hardships because there are still things we don't know. For instance, how are we going to get to our hotel from the train station? We don't know that yet. Supposedly there is a taxi. I wasn't sure. I was trying to find out about this. It was impossible looking it up online. I got a phone number from a friendly passenger who said that they may be around or they may not be. That's pretty much how things work. It's going to be like minus 30 Celsius, which is almost like minus 30 Fahrenheit. It's about a 2-kilometer walk if we did decide to walk. I don't think we want to do that with bags. Plus, we have to figure out how to get back to the train station in the morning. So these are things we still need to work out, and that'll be a fun... this will happen after this show airs, but it'll be fun to see what happens to us. But so far, this train has been pretty awesome. You might have heard some of the activity around us. As the train is filled with families, filled with kids. It's an amazing just scene. If we were in any way uncomfortable, that disappeared within the first few minutes because people are just so warm and curious and filled with mischief, excitement, and just making it fun to be on a train.
Yeah. I don't know. There's so many different things to tell. In our train car alone, because there were young people traveling, there were no less than 2 full-size PlayStations. And, of course, what game are they playing? It's NHL for PlayStation. Yeah, the kids are playing hockey video games on the train.
Well, apparently, this is part of a competition that took place in Sept-Îles. And a bunch of kids are returning to Schefferville on this train. Just our luck. They've been running around having fun, playing games. And keep in mind, everybody knows each other because everybody in Schefferville knows each other. There's only a few hundred people. I think I might have misspoken in the last segment saying there were 200 people. There's 200 people in one region of Schefferville, but it's really closer to 1,000 if you look at surrounding areas and the center part of town. But in this particular case, basically everybody is just interacting in various ways, whether it's playing video games, literally running back and forth between cars, going to the cafe car and back about 50 million times. But it's to me, it's awesome to see how kids are treated in this culture. A First Nations culture where they're allowed to be kids, you know? And I saw this once before when I went to Iqaluit up in Nunavut, back when it was in the Northwest Territories and known as Frobisher Bay. But you're seeing this for the first time. What are your impressions of how kids are being treated?
Well, yeah, I just think it's a sense of ownership that this is their train, this is their form of transportation. And, I mean, just the first thing I noticed was the families getting on board, some of their kids were jumping on top of the seats and climbing all around at first to get things up and down in the luggage carriers overhead, but it quickly turned into just basically like don't touch the ground, you know, like the hot lava games you play when you're a kid, and don't get your socks wet. I think that's the main reason, because everybody takes their shoes off and gets really comfortable. And I think there was another funny situation where, as you said, people are running back and forth to the cafe car. Well, at a certain point, it got to be too fast, and some of the parents started letting them know, but in a really friendly way. They just said, okay, you guys have been able to do your track meet long enough, but this could get out of hand. But it was a really gentle and friendly way.
Well, the way that the guy next to us did it, he just, as his kid, or it might have been someone else's kid, because all the parents know all the kids and vice versa, they were running full speed down the aisle. He just stuck his hand out so the kid couldn't pass. You know, a gentle way of just admonishment. There's no yelling. There's no scolding. The only crying is a baby that doesn't know any better. But everybody else just having the time of their life. I've seen this several times. I've also seen this in Japan, on a boat between China and Japan, where kids just running around, making noise. But it's, you know, they're having a great time, and you just have to adjust what you expect and realize that this is a part of life, and it should be celebrated.
Yeah, there was a little bit of resistance, too, when the game systems came out, because I think they wanted to bring them out at, like, 8 or 9 in the morning, and one of the fathers was like, no, games are for the afternoon, later, you know, and I think he knew what it was going to turn into. I thought it was just going to be someone's personal gaming system, but it turned into an arcade all of a sudden, right around where we were, and, when he was told not to do that, this young person basically just started putting it together himself, which I thought was really funny, because he kept being told to wait and not do it, and every time he was told that, he got another cord out and pulled out a monitor and started trying to set up, but he couldn't set up the whole thing, so eventually his father had to intervene and I think acquiesced, realizing that this was going to be a huge, huge deal for the next couple hours, and gosh, did it turn it. It was like a full-on arcade. There was like cheering and all kinds of passers-by noticing, hey, whose is this? Can I play your player? Can I get in on this? And
it's probably going on right now, because we're in the cafe car, and our car is one card back, so it's possible that there is a full-blown arcade right behind my seat, by the way.
Yeah, and there was another funny instance where a student was chanting and talking about being the champion, and apparently we had a conversation, and apparently both of the teams, I think there's a peewee and then there's an older age group, both of them won when they went to their tournament, and so they have little trophies and stuff, and they're really, really on in good spirits and proud of their accomplishment. And so we kept hearing this gloating about being the champion, and a little tiny Stanley Cup type trophy was being carried around and presented, and there was a lot of pride in those moments, and I just really thought that that was interesting, how this program, I think it's only been going on for about 2 years, and it's something that pretty much everybody is into and really enjoys doing, and it gets some of the students out traveling, and it's so integrated that it is a part of gym in the school. We had a conversation with a woman who works at the school, and she told us all about the program and how if you don't want to do regular gymnasium, you have the opportunity to be on the team, and that's a part of your classes during the day.
It's really something to see this in action. And also, these kids really seem to embrace some Western ways, too, whether it's music, video games, just cultural references. And they're very curious about people like us that suddenly show up in their world asking us all kinds of questions in a variety of languages. I mean, some speak French, some speak English. They all speak, I believe it's Innu or something very much related to Innu, a Cree language.
Yeah, and they're very self-assured, and as you said, you'll be approached and have all kinds of questions. I think at one point I was asked in English and French at the same time where we were from or what we were doing, and I think at first it was French, and I started kind of a little bit to clumsily to say if they spoke English, and then as soon as I said l'anglais, this other student came and said, oh, I can do it, came up and started chatting us up and really got in our face, but mainly because it's this curiosity, and we're kind of oddball travelers on this train, so they're as curious about what we're doing here as we are about how they get on and what life's like up here. So those were really interesting moments, and it's kind of cool to practice a little bit and ask questions and interact a little bit and just see how I don't know, how independent and just really brave and not bashful at all about, you know, interrogating and finding out everything we're doing, and I just really enjoyed to be able to share a little bit and also test my language skills. But these people are under 10 and can speak three languages. I can't speak more than one very well. I can kind of get by with a little bit of basic French, but it's pretty amazing to realize how many languages they're juggling.
These kids from First Nations up in Canada are amongst the happiest, most intelligent, most adventurous kids that we've seen, and it's really inspiring. And to realize this place is next door to New York is so amazing. We were talking about French culture in Quebec, but now we're talking about Native culture as we travel. Actually, we're in Labrador now, the Labrador part of Newfoundland and Labrador, which for some reason encompasses both Newfoundland and Labrador. Whatever, we'll figure that out later. But we, Schefferville is actually just about 2 kilometers away from the border with Labrador. It's over in Quebec, so we cross back into Quebec when we arrive there in a little bit. That's going to pretty much do it for us now. We will see how Schefferville is when we arrive there. Of course, we have to do all this in reverse now. We have to take a 13-hour train trip back tomorrow to Sept-Îles, and then another 9.5 hours. It's supposed to be 8 hours, but I took 9.5 hours because I was really scared and it was snowing and all these cars are very intimidating coming up behind me rapidly. So we have that. Then we have a train to take from Quebec City to Montreal, and then we have a train to take back from Montreal to New York. And then, of course, the real difficulty begins with the Long Island Railroad, but we won't get into that now. This has been a blast.
It really has, and there are so many stories to tell. We've met a couple other people that live around and in the area. We actually also had a conversation with three guys that are going off to hunt for 2 weeks, and they just got off the train, and I asked them all kinds of questions about how long they go out, you know, how frequently they visit, what kinds of luck they have while they're out hunting, and they were really, really friendly and again tested my language skills, but it was really fascinating, and they were so so just generous and warm and interested in New York and everything that we're up to. So it was really cool to share with people and learn about all the different activities and comings and goings that the train is centered around.
And when you realize it, this train is so filled with people and filled with things that are being brought back to their community, how essential this thing is. It's probably the most important train in North America, as well as the weirdest train in North America, because it's not connected to any other rail line, and it only runs a couple times a week, and it just was bought for $1 by First Nations from Canadian Rail, and hopefully it continues and maybe even expands. We're going to go out with an Innu band I was able to find. They actually are quite well known in the Innu community. They're called Kashtin, and they actually came from around Sept-Îles, which is the southern part of the route that we are on right now. So we are continuing on our way to Schefferville and going out with the sounds of Kashtin. Enjoy.
Good night.
Yeah, hey kids, it's Finn on Finn's Revolution right here on WUSB, Stony Brook. It is King Tubby's birthday. We'll be celebrating that a little later, along with the birthday of Robert Wyatt. But before that, we're going to have Danielle Di Picciotto and Alexander Hackey of Hackey Di Picciotto from, well, you're going to hear. Kids. So there's a brand new album coming out this week on the 31st, and it's called The Current, and it's by an operation called Hackey Di Picciotto. And if that doesn't roll off the tongue easily, maybe their names will. Danielle Di Picciotto, a multi-instrumentalist, American artist living in Germany with her husband, Einsterzende Neubauten's Alexander Hackey. And they put out some great, great, great material, and we're going to hear some right now, and then we're going to speak to them. And, yeah, some strange things happened during the technological interview process, so we're going to have to bear with those. But it should be just very appropriate for their music, I personally think. Anyway, so this is brand new from the album The Current. And it's called The Seventh Day, and this is from Hackey Di Picciotto, right here on WUSB Stony Brook. We'll be talking to both of them right after this. We'll be right back. Okay, guys, that, of course, the new single from Haka DiPicciato, and it's really great. The whole album is fantastic, and it's really wonderful, and we're excited to be playing it here. I think it's a USB premiering. I think we're premiering it on our station the first time. And if you want to pick up a copy of this or check it out, you can go to HakeDiPicciotto, that's Haka DiPicciato, Bandcamp, and check it out. And the name of the new album, as we discussed earlier, is The Current. And we are lucky right now to have Danielle DiPicciotto and Alexander Haka